Saturday night travel on Nightlife.
Tourism to Iran has increased almost tenfold in the past two decades, with the country welcoming more than 5.2 million foreign visitors to its shores in 2015. This according to figures from the World Bank. Maybe it's not a country that you think of when you think about a relaxing holiday. After all, it does or has seemed to be at the centre of much of the world's tension in recent decades, hasn't it? And there are travel warnings from the Australian government about going there. But the country, of course, is big. It's got a fascinating history, beautiful natural geography as well, and there are many things to see. Travel writer Steve Madrick joins us this evening. Steve, good evening and welcome to Nightlife.
Thank you for having me on, Phil.
It's an oddball destination, perhaps. What is the travel warning for Australians when it comes to Iran, anyway?
Depending where you're going in Iran. So the most of the country is reconsider the need to travel, which I think is a little strong, given my experiences there. But on the Iraq border and the Afghanistan border, thin strips, do not travel.
Right.
And they're very small parts of the country, and you would have to be... You wouldn't travel there anyway, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
But most of the country in the centre, in the deserts, in the capital cities, reconsider need to travel.
Why are they saying this? What's the actual danger?
They still link it back to the tensions between US and Israel as well, and also Iran's greater footprint in the area with the other some other countries, Syria, etc. There's no really, they don't say there's any public danger as such, where they do with a lot of this reconsidered travel or above warnings in terms of...
I mean, are you likely to be kidnapped?
That's not mentioned on the site, and from my experience is absolutely not. It's nothing you expect. I guess the main thing, everyone I've told I've gone to Iran, they've asked me why, you know, and when you get there you realise... Why? The few people I've spoken to who travelled there talked passionately about it as though it was a safe place, and I didn't believe them 100% until I got there.
Yeah, I suppose I'm getting to why they're saying reconsider travel. Is it connected with the idea that you'd be locked up or kidnapped or you're not going to be assaulted in the street or anything, are you?
I think it's one of the safest countries. Even in the big cities like Tehran, it's one of the safest places to walk that I have walked around.
What about if you're an American? Maybe not.
You probably wouldn't be waving the flag too broadly, but I think most Iranians are very forgiving and very open-hearted. And if you're there and respecting the culture and you don't go out of your way to find trouble, I think you're fine. That was in my experiences and the people I was speaking to who I travel with experiences.
Do the Iranians want you to come? I mean, are they interested in tourism?
Absolutely. I mean, at a governmental level, it's hard to say because it is the supreme leader and the people are very different at very different levels. But everyone you speak to, a lot of the people welcome you openly, but also say that we're not our government. Come here, tell people the experiences you have. And that's what I, you know, that's what I'm doing now.
You need a visa to get there, obviously, do you?
You do.
Is that straightforward to get?
In essence, yes, but you just have to make sure you do it the right way. Up until about 2 years ago, Australians needed to go as part of a tour, but now you can get what's called a visa on arrival, so you can apply when you land in Tehran, which you just really have to have your papers together and follow the letter of what they ask for, which is usually a basic itinerary, accommodation booked, which they will check. They checked mine. Took them 3 hours. And it's about 145 euros. So that's one of the most expensive visas I've ever had.
You can't arrange this in advance, can you?
You can apply online with the e-visa.
Right.
But it's not really an e-visa. You still have to go through the machinations when you get to...
Okay. So they're not actually that welcoming.
the visa system isn't easy, but I think they've made it easier from 2 years ago and perhaps they will make it easier. I hope they do.
One of the impressions you get is that there's a lot of hostility towards the West in Iran. I mean, you see that in public demonstrations. Did you experience that when you were there?
Not at all. I mean, I think that's media bites and sound bites a lot of the time. Of course, it happens, but with the places where you're likely to travel to in Iran, in the center, some of the beautiful cities like Shiraz and Isfahan. I just saw no public demonstrations, of course.
And you were not treated personally with any hostility?
Not a bad word said. Not one. Not even by the authorities either. It was the people and the authorities.
Once you get past the airport.
Airport is it's not even an issue. It's just a little nerve-wracking when you first get through. But everyone I got off the plane with got their visas eventually. So.
Okay, well, let's talk about what's there. I mean, there's rich history in Iran, isn't there? Where did you go? Tell me where you went.
Where to start? I probably missed quite a lot, too, because you have 1 month, and I wanted to go skiing to start, so I went up to the Alborz Mountain.
Skiing?
I went skiing. There's 10 ski resorts in Iran. I went to the biggest and best, they say. It looks a bit James Bondy with the gondolas, you know, very 70s fiberglass looking things. The skiing's good. It's probably less segregated on the mountain than it is in normal society because it's the upper middle class. Great skiing, great mountains. Then I went down the center after spending a week in Tehran. There's plenty to do there as well.
What's Tehran like?
It's quite polluted, but it feels and very busy. It's the traffic and on the metro. There's a lot of people, but it just feels very progressive. It's there's a big art scene. There's a lot of coffee shops coming forward. A lot of homestays and smaller accommodations, which is where I stayed, offering sort of Westerners places, places to sort of, relate to the locals. There's also very distinct neighborhoods. There's art regions. There's neighborhoods closer to the mountains, which. To the north, you just see the snow-capped mountains of the Alborz. And as you get closer to that, it sort of gets more affluent as well.
Right.
So it's just like any normal city, really. It just has this
reputation. When you were skiing, actually, those mountains rise up from the Caspian Sea, don't they? It must be extraordinary, actually.
You couldn't quite see that they're so sheer that you can't... The view is over to other mountains, but they rise up from the Caspian on one side and down to Tehran on the other. They're very sheer, and it looks like it's only a 2-hour drive from Tehran to the ski resort, but it was 3 or 4. That's how sheer they are.
Okay, how do you get around in Iran? Can you hire a car?
You can hire a car. I didn't. I met quite a few tourists, independent tourists that did.
Mm.
The trains are good. Mm. Overnight trains, especially... Traveling old style, you're in a small shared space with 4 people. They share their food, they share the conversation. All the trains, all the long distance trains are overnight, so it feels like it's a really good way to get around. The buses, they call them VIP buses. They have Wi-Fi, in many cases,
it's a much more modern place than we think, isn't it, Iran?
Absolutely. I mean, there are pockets when you head out. Further from the cities where there's villages that look like what you maybe expect. But I think a lot of, especially the cities that I expected to be desert cities like Isfahan and Yazd, actually once you get out of the old cities, are very modern cities with people just trying to get on with their lives. And actually a lot of people were talking about they felt like they're getting restricted from the US sanctions.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't blaming the US, but they just wanted to get on and progress and be part of the greater world. And I think that was what surprised me.
Yeah, you went to a soccer match in Tehran. And
this
is an issue which I did want to talk to you about, which is the treatment of women. Women can't go to the soccer.
No, I mean, women...
So you're in a crowd of 100,000 blokes.
100,000 blokes. And not only that, but the crowd is segmented into two. So one team up one end, one at the other. It feels very, almost like a martial atmosphere. You've got soldiers standing on the turrets above, but it wasn't anything like that. It was just like a boisterous game of sport.
Why can't women go to watch the footy?
I would say that's one thing you've got to know about Iran is it is still very segregated. On the metro, there's a women's carriage. Women still have to wear the full hijab, and everyone
does.
Yeah, even the tourists especially. You want to do that.
So you couldn't go as a lone female tourist, could you?
I've met many.
Really?
You just there are certain precautions you want to take. I think I didn't hear anyone having real problems, but I did hear second-hand and third-hand accounts of them being hassled and things like that. But I think in general, most of the people I spoke to, they didn't, because they knew to cover up, they knew what to expect and to not sort of argue back with the culture, because there's some things there that you won't agree with. It's as simple as that.
Like what?
Well, I mean, as a woman, you would say that forcing people to cover up is, you know, that's something you mightn't agree with. But if you go along with it, I hate to say, but you can get by. And I met many independent female travellers who did. And who
loved. How did you dress when you were there? Did you dress like a Westerner or...?
Absolutely. I covered, it was winter, so I had most of my, or spring, I had most of my bits up covered up anyway, but I would have. I've been to Islamic countries in the past and I'm not going to wear shorts and singlet, that's for sure.
Yes, all right. Where, did you go to Shiraz, what we would call Shiraz?
Yeah, the Shiraz, is it Shiraz? Yeah. Yes, I did, yes.
What's that like?
Of the cities I was talking about in the centre, it's where it's almost the most touristy, strangely. Yeah. So for me, going to Persepolis, which is one of the ancient wonders of the world outside Shiraz, was one of the highlights.
What's there?
It's basically, I think it's 2500 BC, a Greek sort of city that spills out up into the mountains. And it's one of their wonders, and they're very proud of it. I'd say if we're talking back to Shiraz, I think one of the mosques there, called the Pink Mosque, was probably the most beautiful mosque I've seen in the world. It's when you go inside, the lead-lit windows give the whole inside this sort of pink, multicolor hue, and it's
you
beautiful.
Can go inside the mosque, can you?
You can go inside any of the mosques, and in fact, that's I would recommend the mosques in Iran are the tile work, the size and the grandeur of them, without meaning to, you know, I don't usually go to that many churches, but just the size and the grandeur and mainly the tile work, you definitely would go in.
Yeah. Mm. Is the old US embassy in Tehran still there?
Yeah, yes, it is. It's now called the Den of Espionage. I think it's been open as a museum, in inverted commas, for 2 or 3 years now.
Right.
And it is basically left in situ, they claim, and you can walk into the old CIA area with rotary phones and huge computers and shredding machines, and you get led through and talked, you get given the story of their version of the 1979 revolution events, which slightly different from the movie Argo, just a little bit. But I just love what some of the names of the sections in the museum. There's a one called you walk through the Garden of Anti-Arrogance to get through to the museum. And then and then you see the Glassy Room of Negotiation, which was actually a soundproof room, supposedly where the CIA were doing their treachery.
What's a couple of things, just before you go, where do you stay? Are the hotels any good or...?
There's several levels. There's international sort of hotels. I wouldn't say most of the chains are there. I stayed mainly at homestays, and that was a lot of word of mouth. Some of them are actually illegal. So you're not to stay in a homestay, it's just like a B&B. They have to be registered. So technically a lot of them, that's where everyone stays, but it's like you just have to be careful, I would say. But there's plenty of hotels in all the big cities. There is also hostels.
Are they expensive or not?
They can be in Tehran. I wouldn't say by Australian standards, no, not expensive. But what the amount of money that you spend on a meal versus what you pay in a hotel room, there was $150-$200 a night in hotel rooms.
Right.
And you down to 30 or 40.
Right.
But in homestays, you're paying probably another 20, less than that, 15 or 20 a night.
Interesting. Well, it's certainly an out there destination. You just certainly have bragging rights, I imagine, if you attempted it. Steve, terrific to talk.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.